You know, there are some difficult questions concerning God that, to be honest, they're just plain hard. For example, is there anything God can't do? Have you ever had someone ask you that? Anything God can't do? The answer is yes. God cannot make another God because God is eternal. And yes, God cannot do anything that is contrary to His nature. But then there are some other questions that we ask. Why is it that a good God, who is all-powerful, allows evil to exist? It is a question that man has struggled with down through the ages. Another question, will I ever grasp all there is to know about God? That's a pretty easy question to answer, no, but it's still a difficult question. There's a question tonight in the book of Habakkuk that Habakkuk the prophet asks, and he wrestles with it, he struggles with it. And it is a question that perhaps we have struggled with in our own lives. The question is the title of my lesson tonight, and the question is this: how or can a holy God use impure people to punish His people? Can God use those who are worse than His people to punish His own people? You see, that is basically, in a nutshell, Habakkuk's question. And when it comes to us, each of us as individuals here tonight, my question for you is this: how should God handle you? How do you want God to respond to you when you've done something wrong? Do you want Him to use somebody that's worse than you are to punish you, to discipline you in some way, in order to bring about something He desires? These are things that Habakkuk struggled with. I want to get you to look with me in Habakkuk chapter 1. We're only going to spend time in the last half of that first chapter. But in verse 12, here's what he begins by saying. He says, "You are from everlasting, O Lord my God, my Holy One." Actually, he says, "Are you not?" He asks the question. "We will not die. You, O Lord, have appointed them to judge. And you, O Rock, have established them to correct. Your eyes are too pure to approve evil, and you cannot look on wickedness with favor. Why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? Why are you silent when the wicked swallow up those more righteous than they? Why have you made men like the fish of the sea, like creeping things, without a ruler over them? The Chaldeans bring all of them up with a hook, drag them away with their net, gather them together in their fishing net. Therefore they rejoice and are glad. Therefore they offer a sacrifice to their net, burn incense to their fishing net, because through these things their catch is large and their food is plentiful. Will they therefore empty their net and continually slay nations without sparing?" Habakkuk begins in trying to understand this issue by asking a question. And his question pertains to the very nature of God. He says, "Are you not from everlasting?" It's a powerful question. And you know, when you think about the man asking it, he's a prophet. Prophets are supposed to know these things, or we would think. But we don't know much about Habakkuk. As a matter of fact, we know very little except for what we read in this book. Some question whether or not he was a musician in the temple. Some even speculate that he may have been one of the Levites who did service in the temple. The rabbis of old even said that he was the son of the Shunammite woman that Elisha had promised her. But that time frame doesn't work out for this man. He's sent by God to the Babylonians, the Chaldeans, to tell about what's going to happen to them, that they are going to overthrow Judah and then they themselves are going to be overthrown. He prophesies somewhere between 612 and 606 B.C. about the time that Jehoiakim was king. Assyria is in decline. Babylon is rising. He's a contemporary with Zephaniah, with Nahum and Jeremiah. And so he begins by asking, are you not from everlasting? In other words, God, are you not unchangeable? The psalmist said that about God in Psalm 93, verse 2, when he wrote these words. He says, your throne is established from of old. You are from everlasting. And so he begins by saying, are you not from everlasting, my God? I like that phrase, my God. Habakkuk declared him to be my God. This everlasting God. This God who is omniscient. Folks, religion is more than just a ritual. It's more than just a grip upon God. It is a relationship with God. There is a definite closeness to God because God has drawn an individual to Himself and called him His own. And what we find is over and over again, these ideas are brought out in Scripture. David, in Psalm 18, verse 1, makes this statement. He says, I love you, O Lord, my strength. The Lord is my rock and my fortress and my deliverer. And then he says, my God. My rock in whom I take refuge, my shield and the horn of my salvation, my stronghold. Later, Paul, in prison, writing a letter to the church at Philippi, would call God my God, because in Philippians chapter 4, verse 19, he says, and my God will supply all your needs according to his riches in glory in Christ Jesus. And so there is this closeness that Habakkuk has to God. He is from everlasting. He is my God. And then he says one more thing about him. My Holy One. Holiness is a virtue celebrated in heaven above all others. As a matter of fact, in Psalm 5, we find these words. For you are not a God who takes pleasure in wickedness. No evil dwells with you. The boastful shall not stand before your eyes. You hate all who do iniquity. Why? Because God is holy. God is perfection. God is like no other. And there are certain truths that are in existence where He reigns and where He lives that have to do with His holiness and His character and His nature. And so what Habakkuk says is, this is my God. But then he asks, or he makes a statement, we shall not die. Habakkuk believes that God is not going to simply cast off His people. He's not going to permit them to perish. God is going to continue to have people in this world as long as the world stands. And so he's working his way through this, and he's thinking about the character of God, and then he makes a statement, you, O Lord, have appointed them to judge. And he uses a word to describe God. He calls Him a rock. Moses is the first one who used this term all the way back in Deuteronomy 32, verse 4. And what Moses said back there is, he simply said, the rock. His work is perfect, for all His ways are just, a God of faithfulness and without justice. Righteous is and upright is He. He's describing God's stability, God's security, God's uprightness. And yet what he says is God has ordained these people, and we're fixing to understand some things about Him, to bring about His judgments. He even says one other thing about God. He says, your eyes are too pure to look upon evil. Folks, sin is despicable in the eyes of God. He has nothing to do with it. He cannot behold it with satisfaction. And that's good, because we could not begin to worship someone who is not supremely holy, which God is. You see, no matter how good any of us are, we're imperfect people. And because we're imperfect people, there are times that our eyes do behold evil. There are times that our eyes tolerate evil and even relish in it. But God bears the sight of evil because He knows He will overcome it. God allows some things to exist even though He does not approve of them for the moment in time. And I don't know about you, but there is something that when I think about it and think about all that it entails, makes me stop and take notice. Have you ever thought about standing before God for the first time? Standing before Him in judgment. I know that His Son is the one who will carry out the judgment, but to stand before someone who is perfectly holy, in which there is no blemish, no sin, nothing that could taint, nothing that could be called immoral, in the brightness of His presence. And the only thing that allows any of us to be able to stand before Him is the fact that we're standing there covered in the blood of Christ. Other than that, we don't have a right to stand before God, because we are guilty. And so this is the picture that Habakkuk paints of God. He says, "You are from everlasting. You are my God. You are holy. Your eyes are too pure to look upon evil." And so here's the problem. Here's the contradiction. In verse 13, we notice it. He asks the question, why? If all of this is true of you, God, why do you look with favor on those who deal treacherously? How could you possibly allow these people to find favor in your sight, to be able to do what they're about to do, what you're going to send them to do? It seems to be a contradiction. How can God be holy and yet use unholiness to achieve His purpose? It doesn't fit. And that's what Habakkuk is saying. It doesn't fit, God. His faith staggers at the thought that God would use these treacherous Chaldeans or Babylonians. And yet, in all of this questioning, if you'll notice, God doesn't say anything. He is silent on the matter, at least for now. And that's something that Habakkuk brings out, verse 13. He understands, Habakkuk does, that Judah deserves her punishment. He recognizes that, but then the question is, in essence, how is it that you can use somebody that is more wicked than we are to punish us? How can that possibly be right? And God doesn't say anything. Have you ever asked that question? God, why do you allow wicked people to harm your people? Why do you allow people who are more wicked than your people to do hurtful things to your people? God doesn't answer him. And God's silence does not indicate that God consents. As a matter of fact, in Psalm 50, verse 21, one of the things that we find God saying is, "These things you have done, and I kept silence. You thought that I was just like you." But the message there is, I'm not. I'm different from you. The fact that I don't say anything, the fact that I don't act does not mean that I don't notice, that I am not aware of what's going on. But then the question comes back is, why does God tolerate evil and permit the triumph of the wicked? Because it has to be an offense to His holiness, the person that He is. And if God uses them, why does He do that? Habakkuk paints the picture of what these people are going to do, these Chaldeans, these Babylonians. He compares the people that God has made, mankind. He says, God, You have made them like fish in the sea. What does He mean by that? What He means is that the people You've created, the people they're going to come down and that they're going to act treacherously toward, they are like fish in the sea. They are helpless. They lack the ability to organize themselves for the purpose of self-protection. They are like sea creatures. They have no ruler to guide them. They just kind of go about doing what they want to do. And the Babylonians of old, there is a connection here, because what we find is that when the Babylonians would raid or go into a country and destroy it, and they would take their captives away, folks, they would literally take hooks, and they would put those hooks either in the nose or the lips of the captives, and then they would tie a rope to it, and they would run the rope from captive to captive, and they would lead them away, because you're not going to do anything when there's a rope tied to a hook in your lip or your nose. So these Babylonians are like these fishermen that capture people. And he says they catch them in their net. They have little regard for the welfare of humanity. They're like fishermen catching unprotesting fish. Just capture them, put them in the basket, carry them on. And the Babylonians, he says, they even rejoice and are glad. And to make matters worse, he tells us that they sacrifice to their nets. Now he's using something here, but the Babylonians are worshiping the means that bring them their military success. They see their might as their god. And Habakkuk asks a question as he comes to the end of the chapter. He says, in essence, is he speaking about this nation? Is he to keep on destroying nations without mercy? They empty their nets, they go back for more fish. They empty their nets, they go back for more fish. Is there no end to what they're going to do? Are they going to be allowed, because of their greed for conquest, just to keep doing what they've been doing and worshiping their own power and their own might that's allowing them to do this? And God comes back in chapter 2 and He answers and He says, let me tell you, these people that you're talking about, Israel, or Judah, the ones I'm sending Babylon against, they're wicked too. They've done some things that are wrong, and he goes through a series of woes about some of the things they've done. But you know, the song we sing, the Lord is in His holy temple, let all the earth keep silence before Him, it comes from right here in Habakkuk. And so how are we tonight to reconcile these truths with the God that we worship? First of all, let me say that there are some things that we can take to heart. One is that God will ultimately terminate the reign of the wicked. We know that. You can read Psalm 1. And one of the things that David says in Psalm 1 is that the Lord knows the way of the righteous, but the way of the ungodly shall perish. Last verse of that psalm. God will terminate those who do evil. I don't know when. I can't stand up here and tell you He's going to do it on this date at this time. I just know that that's what God will do. God's judgment will come. We've looked at this once before, that we reap what we sow. And those who sow to the flesh will, of the flesh, reap corruption. God's judgment will come about. And as Peter said, in 2 Peter chapter 2, verse 9, that the Lord knows how, as he says, to keep the unrighteous under punishment for the day of judgment. God knows how to do that. And the reason that will happen, the reason I know that to be true, is because God is a righteous God, and God's righteousness demands that he act. Now, that being said, how do we respond? I want to encourage you tonight, regardless of what happens in this world, and I say these things because I read something just this past week that just, folks, it literally turned my stomach. In Pakistan, a 28-year-old mother of four, 6 months into her fifth pregnancy, her young husband were brutally killed by those who accused them of burning a copy of the Quran. They were Christians. They couldn't read. What she was burning was just old paper that had Arabic writing on it, and somebody mistakenly mistook it as being a copy of the Quran. And they beat her severely and then threw her body into a kiln. And then they threw her husband into the kiln and let him burn to death. Why? I can't answer. I don't have the answers for those kind of things that go on in this world. But I do know this, that I serve a God who is a great God. And I know that there is a faith that will pierce through the darkest fog. It is a faith that believes that God is fully in control of all that exists in this world. And because of that, I continue to pray, and I encourage you to continue to pray for the things that go on in this world, and pray for God's people, and pray that God will bring about His vengeance in His time on those who would perpetrate such acts of ungodliness against His people. And expect God to act. Know that He will. I don't know when, but I know that He will. Trust God to keep His promises, because that's what sustains us. When we don't know all of the answers, trusting God and knowing that He is still in control. In Job 38, God is questioning Job about what Job knows about the foundation of the world and the creation of the world. And God asked him, where were you, in essence, when I established the world? And I said to the seas, thus far you may come, Job 38, verse 11, and no further. You see, God sets a limit. He sets a limit on the things in this creation, and He sets a limit upon those who would hurt or do ill to His people. And one of the things that God did with Satan when Satan wanted to afflict Job, if you go back to Job chapter 1, verse 12, is He said, behold, all that he has is in your power. God's saying this to Satan. But then He adds something else. Only do not put forth your hand on him. I will let you afflict him to this point, but you shall not go further than that. God set a boundary. And aren't you thankful that God sets a boundary on Satan for you and your life? God instructed Hezekiah some years before this, several years before this, back almost 100 years before this, when Sennacherib, at the head of the Assyrian army, had surrounded the city of Jerusalem and was threatening to attack that city. And God said to Hezekiah, after Hezekiah petitioned God in the temple, He says, he, that is Sennacherib, will not come to this city or shoot an arrow here. He will not come before it with a shield or throw up a siege ramp against it. 2 Kings 19, verse 32. I believe that God is in control. And folks, I know that our existence is from God. We are here because God allows us to exist. And we must be careful not to quarrel with God. We can ask our questions. but don't quarrel with God. Isaiah said in Isaiah 45, verse 9, he says, "Woe to the one who quarrels with his maker. An earthenware vessel among the vessels of the earth. Will the clay say to the potter, 'What are you doing?' Or the one thing you are making say, 'He has no hands?'" We may not always understand, but folks, we can have the faith to believe that our God is in control and He will watch over His people. And while we don't know what the outcome of all of the things we see around us are, Habakkuk didn't know why God would do what God would do, but he trusted God because God was in His holy temple. And all the earth will keep silent before Him. Tonight, you know, the question I guess I have for you is, how strong is your faith? Do you really believe in a God who rules this world, who controls the destiny of this world, the destiny that who controls all of history and is moving it in a direction that He has decided? And that ultimate direction is to bring all of history to a culmination in which He will send His Son back in all of His glory to take the faithful home with Him and to judge the unrighteous. The question I have for you tonight is this: will you be among the faithful? Will you be one of those that will hear, "Well done, good and faithful servant"? Or will you be one that He says, "I don't know you"? Please don't let those words be spoken to you. If you are not a child of God, if you have not been buried with His Son in baptism, if you're not living that life of faith on a daily basis, and through that life confessing Christ, why not start tonight? Why not give your life to Him and be buried with Him in baptism so that you can become a child of the King? If you need to respond, we invite you to come as together we stand and sing.